should you represent yourself in court? Now, many people here do, in part because they think they can do a better job than a lawyer, but mostly because of cost. But a new study from Ulster University suggests if you do represent yourself, you're at risk of not getting a fair trial. Let's hear from the lead researcher, Professor Gráinne McKeever. Good evening.
Good evening.
First of all, if you're involved in a civil case around, say, divorce or adoption or who gets custody of children, or it could be bankruptcy. I think that's really what the areas we're talking about. Why would you be representing yourself in the first place?
Well, our research took 2 years. We talked to litigants in person who were in civil and family courts in Northern Ireland. We talked to court actors and we talked to people who help individuals who go to court without a lawyer. And we asked them why they went to court without a lawyer. And there are lots of complex reasons. So lots of people have lots of different reasons for doing so. But two basic themes came out. One, people go to court because they can't afford to have a lawyer, so they go to court without a lawyer for financial reasons. So that might be that they didn't qualify for legal aid and they couldn't afford the expenditure that was going to be required to employ a solicitor and barrister. Or it might be that they felt that it wasn't a good way to spend disposable income or money that they needed for other purchases within their life. And so they didn't think that the price that they were going to have to pay was worth it or affordable.
Right, but Gráinne, why would it mean that there wouldn't be the fairness in the trial that everybody has a right to?
Well, it doesn't necessarily mean that you won't have a fair trial. What we identified in our research was the risk that individual litigants who go to court without a trial might face, and that risk transferring into a threat to the right to a fair trial. We couldn't at any point establish that anybody's right to a fair trial had been breached. What we looked at were the triggers that could potentially jeopardise their right to a fair trial. So lots of barriers that they faced in being able to participate in their court proceedings. And so if you have a lawyer, you're protected to some extent from the lack of legal knowledge that you have. You're protected from the lack of information that you have about how the court works, the court procedures, what the court expects from you. You don't have that knowledge necessarily as a litigant person, the knowledge and the understanding of what your case involves and how the court will treat you. And you're also protected to some extent from the emotional trauma, as some litigants in person described it, of going to court without knowing really what you were doing. You, over some issues that were quite important to individuals.
You say that there should be a balance between the parties to the case in the opportunity they have to present their case in a manner that doesn't disadvantage them. And you say some judges go further than others in trying to reach this balance. Don't the courts have a duty to serve the people who bring cases and not expect them to turn into lawyers?
Yes, the court's duty is to respect the rights that are available under Article 6 of the European Convention on Human Rights, which protects the right to a fair trial. And two specific issues within that affect litigants in person, which is the right to effective participation and the right to equality of arms. And we saw very clearly that there were some very good examples of judges in our court system in Northern Ireland who went above and beyond to try and protect that right to a fair trial. But it's a very difficult balance to achieve, because you have to balance the rights of both sides of the party who's represented and the party who's not. So we saw some efforts that were being made that were much more effective than others. We saw some really good examples from the judiciary on how they can protect that right. We saw some less good examples, and what we'd like to see is a better consistency so that there is an assurance that best practice is followed by the judiciary in protecting that very fundamental right.
How do people get the information they need? You say there's a need for a cultural change. A change to what? Give me practical measures that should be put in place.
So one of the very practical issues that we launched the research today at a conference with the Northern Ireland Human Rights Commission, who are our partners in this project. And we looked at all of the research findings and all of the research recommendations. And the main research recommendation that we made was cultural change. The reform that has to happen has to be inclusive of multiple perspectives. So it can't just be a top-down, here's what the court says needs to happen, here's what the judges say needs to happen. It has to involve those people who use the system. And one of the really positive things that has come out of today, we've had the Department of Justice who attended and presented at the conference. And one of the Department of Justice officials, David Lavery, has made a public commitment to have a litigant in person reference group that would advise the department on what reforms should be made and how they should be made.
Right. Just in a sentence, Gráinne, would you still encourage people to represent themselves if they feel they have to?
I think that has to be a personal choice. I think they'd need to be aware of what it involves. I think that would allow people to make a much more informed choice. They may well be at a disadvantage in certain business areas, but if they have the information that they know what's involved and what's ahead of them, I think they'll be much better placed to make that decision in a way that will disadvantage them less.
Gráinne McKeever, thank you very much.
Thank
17
you.
Minutes to six. Does your council have a mayor?